prayer power, interceding for others. Commentary for the July 25th, 2020 Sabbath School lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry. www.visitstillwaters.com. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. Matthew 7, verse 7. As a young man, I became convinced that prayer was a matter of appeasement, and if I did not do it right, God would not be pleased with me and would ignore my prayers. I tried to make sure I was doing everything right. Like a magician's apprentice learning to properly cast spells, I had to make sure my hands and my body were properly positioned and the right series of words were uttered. I believe this was how to ensure success with my petitions. However, the results were underwhelming at best and non-existent at worst. Because of my perspective and pride that I was right, instead of questioning my approach, I simply sought for parts of the magic that I was missing. This caused me to go through a period when I thought the key was to pray on my knees and never stand during prayer, whether offered by myself or others. I was reminded of this period when I witnessed another young pastor get on his knees at the pulpit for prayer recently. I hope his success in prayer is better than what I found. The position made no difference for me. The results were the same. This does not mean that I did not experience spectacular miracles and answers to prayer, only that those answers did not depend on the position of my body or the formulaic words spoken. I discovered an answer eventually that worked for me, but not before going through some difficult times. As Christians, our experience with church tends to be more didactic than dialectical. Someone stands up front and pontificates to the rest of the congregation about how things are to be done. There's typically no dialogue, no asking of, "What did you mean by that?" or "How is that to be applied in my life?" For some, this is a difficult environment to grow spiritually in. It can also be dangerous, for the speaker may be poorly qualified to instruct others, not having found a valid spiritual path themselves. However, I was able to fully plug into this, as I was raised in a home with an alcoholic father, and I learned early on that life was a matter of keeping him appeased to avoid his wrath. Therefore, if God was our Father, I knew exactly what the relationship called for. I was fully attuned to anything the speaker might say that would tell me how to appease God, just like I had sought to appease my Father. And although I learned later they were not the result of any appeasement on my part, enough apparent miracles and answers to prayer took place that I felt validated in this appeasement approach. As a Seventh-day Adventist, I included with this package of formulaic obedience, strict Sabbath observance, tithe paying, and sending my son to parochial school. This was my practice for many years, but also during that time, a situation was developing that would change all of that. During my first year of pastoring with several churches in the U.S. Midwest, my first wife was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. This became a matter of persevering prayer for me and many church members. But despite those prayers, she continued to worsen. Eventually, I had to make the difficult decision to leave the ministry to care for her needs. We struggled for years, and while the church was supportive in several ways, it was also difficult. Employment offers from the church were rescinded when they discovered my wife was disabled. Student loans held by my Adventist college were turned over to collections rather than attempting to compassionately help us in our need. I learned the value of that college degree in practical terms when I sought secular employment to support my family. The saying that if you have a dollar and a theology degree, then you have enough to buy a soda seemed all too true. But despite all of that, I struggled to remain faithful, believing that a stern God expected obedience, no matter what abuse we might endure. And if not for my sake, at least for the hope of my wife's healing, I had to do all I could to carry on. We fell behind on rent, instead paying thousands in tithes, offerings, and parochial school tuition. Perhaps in recognition of the amounts I was paying, the church placed me in positions of leadership in the local church and the school board. Although I feel I served those positions well, they also brought me deeper into the idea that obedience was necessary to appease God and to be saved. Before, my perspective on God and the weekly sermon were the only ecclesiastical sources of that pressure. When I occupied those leadership positions, I discovered that it created the possibility of censure by others caught in the same appeasement struggle if my obedience was not constantly on display and verifiable. Things came to a head as my wife worsened. As we are taught in the book of James, we gathered the elders of the church to anoint her and pray over her. She was not healed, but instead steadily worsened and died a tragic death that even today, many years later, it pains me to think about. Some might say that our faith was inadequate. However, James also states that our faith is demonstrated by our works, not our words. Obedience seemed to be key again to appease God to the point that he would grant healing. I had tried to be obedient to a fault, and my wife was perhaps even more so, being raised in the church, brought up through the parochial school system, and strongly influenced by a family with conservative religious values. How much more is required to finally get God to intercede compassionately for us in the face of prolonged suffering? This crisis of faith meant that I needed to search for answers that had eluded me for years. Instead of seeking answers from the church, I took the matter directly to God. In the book of Isaiah in the King James Version, God says, "Come now and let us reason together." And in Malachi, God says, "Prove me now," specifically in the context of tithe paying. Since I had been paying tithe faithfully for decades and continued to struggle and was not seeing the overflowing blessings promised, the only test I could make was to cease paying it. I did this several times off and on over the next few years and saw no difference between times I was tithing and times I was not, other than finally being able to cover all my obligations for utilities, housing, etc. It also freed up some funds to support missionary activities that had previously gone to support a vast, multi-layered administrative network that spanned the globe and seemed ever more interested in using that administrative authority to impose more and more control over the local churches and less for the purpose of introducing others to Christ. I was also set free from niggardliness in my relationship with God, worrying about things like whether I should tithe on the gross, even though I never see all of that money, or on the net, which would mean I would not have such a big bite out of my income. Those discussions can get incredibly involved and can delve right down to the mint and cumin of things. The minutiae of obedience can be a heavy burden we laid ourselves with. But Jesus says he sets us free from burdens. So maybe it should not be surprising if we do not find peace. This test encouraged me to try other approaches to my relationship to God. One of the discoveries I made was that God does not seek to establish an appeasement relationship with us. If that were the case, there's nothing we can offer him to accomplish that. If our obedience could in any way restore our relationship with God, Jesus would not have had to die. In fact, every claim that our obedience appeases God in some way negates the efficacy of that sacrifice by Christ, asserting that it is not enough to open the door to salvation. We too often take the straight gate and make it ever more straight with our denominational demands to embrace appeasement theology. That kind of theology opens the door for ridiculous boasting that implies that because a wealthy parishioner is able to pay a double or triple tithe out of their abundance, they are somehow walking in the graces of God that the poor and disabled can never achieve. They would be the first to tell the widow, who contributed her mite, that nice as a gift is, it is not enough. She needs to be on a systematic giving plan and commit to regular contributions to the church budget. That is the problem with appeasement. It always asks for more and more by implying that whatever we offer must somehow be lacking if we are not experiencing the prosperity that Malachi promised. What I have discovered is that God is not some hoary entity sitting on a throne atop the pile of our offerings and sacrifices, gloating over the loyalty of the wealthy who give so much to the church. No, that is man's perspective. We should have learned the falsity of that from observing Jesus' life here on earth. He was continually accused of disobedience. Imagine that, accusing God of disobedience to his will. He was the truest revelation of God's will through his compassion for the poor and the sick, and his rebuke of the indifference of the wealthy to those struggling just to survive around them. I discovered that God is not seeking to judge us over our obedience. Instead, he is seeking to save us from the untoward consequences of some of our choices, consequences that increase suffering and oppression. To that end, he simply wants to restore what we had in the beginning, to walk and talk with us. I can almost hear the tears in his voice when that relationship was broken and he cried out to Adam and Eve, "Where are you?" What joy that will be for us and him when it is fully restored. That's all prayer is, building the restoration of what we had, where we can once again walk and talk with God as a close friend, with love and open hearts. And sometimes the best response to what we tell him is not be a heavenly vending machine full of answers to prayer, but to weep with our heartbreaks or rejoice with our happiness. Have you lost a loved one? He knows what that is like. Have others betrayed you? He knows that as well. Have some taken what little you have for themselves? He has been treated the same. Have others given you a public beating? They did it to him too. He was hurt in every way, and he wants to hear about our experience, share our sorrows, and speak hope and healing into our hearts. All we need do is talk to him and tell him about it. He will be happy to listen. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You can find footnotes giving the text referred to in this commentary at www.visitstillwater.com. You can also listen to other podcasts and read other commentaries at that location. God bless.